Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of Fightin' Words on the Fightin' Words News Network. Fightin' Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services, and the men and women of first line, the doctors, the nurses, and the CNAs, and all the personnel at the hospital who are fighting to keep everybody alive during this pandemic. For them, we send out our greatest appreciation, and we appreciate everything they do. Tonight we're missing one of our staff members, Bob G, who is everyone knows is a MMA fighter. Bob is his wife is transitioning from Walter Reed Hospital to Camp Pendleton in California. She's actually somebody that we admire very much. Not only is she a physician, she's a Navy physician, but she was part of the team that brought down Khamenei, SEAL Team 6. So you know that she's also an MMA participant, and I would definitely would not want to miss with her. So I want to say a great evening to a guy who has gone through hell this last year and finally is getting straightened out by the Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. He sounds great. We'll see how he goes tomorrow. Chris, how you doing tonight? Oh, he's, Ty, how you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How are you doing, sir?
Doing great. Ty, before we go any further, let's go ahead and plug your new film.
Well, it's not out. We're still working on it, so there's not too much too much I want to say about it yet because it is a pretty sensitive subject.
Good.
But, yeah, we're in the midst of filming it and shooting it right now.
Good. Good. Well, let me ask you something. Ryan Garcia looks like he's got a big fight coming against Luke Campbell. What's your thoughts?
Really interested in seeing that fight. It would obviously, at this point in Ryan Garcia's young career, be the best opponent he's faced.
Mm-hmm.
actually just went to purse bid because they weren't able to negotiate a contract. Eddie Hearn had said that negotiations were quite difficult. So hopefully it'll be sorted out in purse bid and we'll get that fight. But this will truly give us a gauge on where Ryan Garcia is at this point in time in his career. Again, he's only 21. When we look at young guys who achieved at a young age, you know, in my recent memory, I think of Canelo Alvarez, who at 20, 21, I think at 20 or 21, he had fought Floyd Mayweather. He lost, but you see how much he learned from that. So as long as Ryan Garcia doesn't take a beating, it's not win or lose, it's win or learn in this fight. Because Campbell, even though he doesn't have a major name in the States, he's a very quality operator. A lot of people figured the fight with he and Lomachenko could have gone either way. I believe Zito thought Campbell edged the fight. I thought the fight could have been a draw. Campbell was right there tooth and nail, and he's only outside of that lost to Linares. So this could be a very interesting fight. Wouldn't be surprised if Campbell won, but if Ryan Garcia is the talent and you know the prospect everyone thinks he is, and if he were to beat Campbell, that'd be a tremendous statement.
Yeah, there's been an awful lot of press on Ryan Garcia and his career so far, especially in the last 3 or 4 months. He's really raised in popularity on all the rags, boxing news, fight words, fight news, and all the other outlets. They seem to really like him, both as a fighter and as a person. Speaking of which, I just saw a blurb about our friend Ray Robinson. And,
He's been in the news a lot lately, actually. His name has been in the news a lot lately.
Yeah, now there's a big controversy about why a certain fighter won't fight him because he's afraid of him. I did not know. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
Go ahead. That's right.
I was going to say, you know, what it is Terrence Crawford's an undefeated pro. But, you know, one of the biggest issues that people tend to have with Terrence Crawford, not as a person at all, but as a fighter, is that for all his prodigious talent, he hasn't really fought an elite opponent. He's fought some very good opponents, but he hasn't fought with the general consensus would consider an elite opponent. Much as I love Ray, at this stage in his career, Ray is considered a very good fighter, but he also would be an elite opponent for Terrence Crawford. However, the fact of the matter is Terrence Crawford's an undefeated professional. The last person to defeat Terrence Crawford in the boxing ring was Ray Robinson. And
that's
so
right,
with that said, you know, Ray Robinson kind of looks at himself as like a Vernon Forrest to Terrence Crawford's Shane Mosley. You know, Shane Mosley was a dominant, you know, welterweight, was undefeated, had just defeated Oscar De La Hoya, was, you know, expected to have this long, tremendous reign. And he fought a guy who beat him in the amateurs, Vernon Forrest, who wasn't as popular at the time. And, you know, Forrest went ahead and beat him. So, you know, that's basically Robinson's, you know, it's basically his bargaining chip to try to get this fight. Now, Crawford is saying, well, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, Ray Robinson is a pretty good fighter, but he has three losses, and it's not widely known. If I beat Ray Robinson, everybody will still be saying I fought no one. But the fact of the matter is there really isn't necessarily a better fight out there for Terrence right now.
Right.
You know, it doesn't really look like the Pacquiao fight will come off. If it did come off when they both were with Top Rank, I really doubt seriously it'll come off now. But you never know. Pacquiao's a gun. It's something he could demand. But with him being over at PBC, before I could see Heyman allowing him to cross the street to fight Crawford, you'd have to fight the winner of Errol Spence, Danny Garcia, or Sean Porter, or one of those guys. Or Donis.
Sure.
So the fact of the matter is that Ray Robinson right now is as good a proposition outside of maybe Kell Brook that Terrence Crawford could choose. So the fight I like. Why not? I like my guy Ray get a good payday and you know, tremendous opportunity to upset the apple cart.
He deserves it. Yeah, you know, we talked to him, 2 weeks ago, Chris? Are you there, Chris? Yeah, I think he must have. He may have hung his phone up by mistake. I'll get him back on the line.
Regardless of you know, Terrence Crawford being considered a top 2 or 3 pound-for-pound guy, and Ray Robinson considered to be a fringe contender, regardless of all of that, when you have two world-class fighters, you know, a lot of times it comes down to styles. Styles make fights. And Ray Robinson is a tall, rangy southpaw.
Right.
So, you know, he just may have the recipe to beat Terrence Crawford, but we'll never know if that doesn't happen in the ring.
We know we talked to Ray. I want to say it's 3 weeks. Yeah, it is 3 weeks ago. I'm just looking back at my notes, and he was more than vociferous about this thing. And we went back to, you know, we've been following Ray since he was with the Tiberis back in Wilmington.
Right.
And that's many years ago. And then up to the time he was going to have the biggest fight in his life at the casino up in Bethlehem. Then he had the car accident. Then he was off for a year. And now he's back now. His last three outings were good outings, but he got two draws and a loss.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you know, okay, so the loss happened first, and that was to Ordonez Ugas, who's proven to be one of the best welterweight fighters. I thought he beat Sean Porter. And you know, Errol Spence just beat Sean Porter, but I thought Ugas beat Sean Porter. So the fact of the matter is Ugas at welterweight is one of the top fighters. He fights on that level. So that's who Ray lost to. And then he went and had a draw with the guy, and I can't pronounce his last name, Kavaskulis or whatever, that Terrence Crawford just fought. Ray had a draw with him, and most people thought Ray won that fight. Then Ray went and fought the undefeated British prospect Josh Kelly, and had another draw in a fight. A lot of people thought Ray won. Both of those guys were undefeated. Ray took their undefeated record. Ray's the one who put blemishes on these two guys' undefeated record. So even though he didn't get the decision, he has fought very well his last two fights against guys that are expected to challenge for titles. Ray fought on even, if not advantageous terms against these guys. So even though the last three says 1-3, it's a little deceiving when you look at the context of what happened. You know, when he fought Ugas, he had been off for like a year, too. So he fights Ugas, he doesn't have a great result there. But then once he starts coming back and fighting regularly, he's fighting these so-called elite prospects, tooth and nail, on even terms, if not advantageous terms. So the results don't look spectacular, but the action in the ring has shown that he can fight at this level. And again, he's to say his style is not kryptonite to a Terrence Crawford.
Just so everybody knows, we're joined by another one of our great staff members, Zito. How you doing tonight?
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I'm glad to actually come on. I want to say hi to my beloved brother, and I want to say hi to my beloved family member, Butch. I mean, I love y'all and I missed y'all. But
so good to hear you, bro.
Here and just be with y'all. I mean, this is love this part of the week. But I heard what my brother was talking about with Crawford and Ray, and I remember talking to Ray 2 weeks ago about the same thing. And I mean, when you talk about matching up fights with Crawford, Bob Arum's running out of space. You want me to be totally honest? Bob Arum's running out of space. So when you go into this, he's not welterweight heavy. Who does Bob Arum really have at welterweight to where he can't sign Ray, the new Ray, the last man to give Terrence Crawford his L? I mean, that's literally right about now. I mean, within the next two fights, that can really happen. That could really happen. And just because, I mean, where's the matchups at? Where's the matchups at? Once you start getting into welterweight, you're dealing with Al Haymon. You're dealing with Errol Spence. You're dealing with Sean Porter. You're dealing with Keith Thurman. You're dealing with Manny Pacquiao, who's Crawford is really kind of seeking for. So even if he's seeking for that, he has to deal with that cross promotion, which leads me to believe that that's not going to happen anytime soon. Especially that Crawford's talking about he wants Errol Spence. That cross-promotion is going to be a problem. So we're going to have to look at the promotion that Bob Arum is able to put on. And now that boxing's coming back, you have to put something on for your star guy.
Sure.
Well, here's the other problem, too, that Terrence Crawford kind of presents, and which makes Ray a kind of viable opponent. The other problem is we're in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of COVID. And you know, they're trying to work on getting that Vasily Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez fight. You know, Stan Lopez, you know, he wants a little bit more than what Bob Arum was offering. And Lomachenko has actually come down a little bit on his price to get the fight made. Well, here's the thing, right? So, Terrence Crawford, like Lomachenko, these guys have minimum. These guys have minimum time.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that Terrence Crawford has stated that he is not willing to fight below his minimum. And that is nothing wrong. That is every right to do that. But the fact of the matter is because we're in the middle of a pandemic, you're not going to get a live fight. Well, if you're going to fight at your minimum, if you're not going to fight any lower than your minimum, then there's not going to be enough money in the promotion to secure an Errol Spence, even if you could have that cross to step off. So the fact of the matter is even if Top Rank had another Terrence Crawford caliber opponent, unless they both went under their minimum contract, you know, fee, they wouldn't be able to make the fight anyway. So with that being said, he wouldn't be able to secure a top flight opponent right now in this economic, you know, situation regarding boxing. So really, again, it's common knowledge, all year, that his only options really right now would be a Kell Brook, who hasn't fought at 147, but he says he can make it, or right now a Ray Robinson. Those are his two lead options. The fact of the matter is I don't know financially if you can work it out with Kell Brook unless you go fight in England. You know what I mean? Because the fact of the matter is Kell Brook may want a little more than the promotion can do right now. Specifically, Kell Brook has a name, but not something that's going to draw the stateside revenue, pay-per-view revenue in. So that really only may make money in England, but even without the crowd, you know? So Ray, that's another thing that makes Ray so viable, because the fact that Terrence Crawford will not subside off his minimum. The other thing is, you guys remember, Crawford was going to fight, this guy's a quality operator, but the fact of the matter is Crawford was scheduled to fight Luis Collazo before he fought Amir Khan. So I think Ray is a very viable opponent. The only fact of the matter is Ray is coming off draws opposed to a win. But since when did that matter? Right? Put two guys in a ring. Storyline is the last one to get his loss, and it's a fight that he made. He put it on TV. Yes,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, Z, earlier you had said something about Leo Santa Cruz versus Tank Davis. And today he announced that he will take less money to fight Davis. He wants it. There's
Santa
been a
Cruz,
lot of trash
okay.
talk between the two of them. Yeah.
Well, as I said before, Tank is a little heavier than Santa Cruz, naturally, just because Santa Cruz, he's coming from 126. I mean, even below, I don't know. I just remember him having titles and, like, having a good reign at 126. He moves up
Santa
to 130.
Santa Cruz, I believe,
and
is actually coming up from 118.
I thought he did come from lower. So that's why I remember
Tank
him establishing
at
126.
Who's significantly younger, started at 130 and had trouble making 130. And then
Tank
just
is
went
naturally
for 135
bigger.
Too. So, yeah,
exactly. Tank is naturally bigger. This fight is happening at 130, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's happening at 130. Okay. So here's my thing. Tank is going to be heavy for 130. Santa Cruz is going to be light for 130. If they, which means to me, they're kind of perfectly matching up. Just because Tank is having trouble making that weight to a guy who's light making that weight.
He moved up to 135 and he missed weight at 135.
Yes,
we know he missed weight a couple times at 130. So,
exactly.
A lot of times, if you see Tank, you know, one of the running jokes in the boxing community is that between fights, Tank gets pregnant. You know, they were saying he looks like he's pregnant.
Yeah, they get
so
yeah, yeah.
Between fights. Now,
he's Adrian Broner.
If Tank comes in and at 130 and he's fitting in shape, then, you know, chances are he might just be a little too big, hit a little too hard, be a little too strong for Santa Cruz, no matter who you think the better boxer is. He's just a much bigger guy.
Well, here's the thing.
Significant difference in physicality.
It depends.
Tank coming at 130, though. The question is, can he be healthy at 130?
And that's my point. My point is this. They're meeting at a combined weight to where Tank is seems a little too heavy to make, and Santa Cruz is kind of just now, I mean, at an older age, well, not an advanced age, but a little older age than what he is, he's moving into a little heavier weight. I see two things going on with this. With Santa Cruz, if he can take Tank early, if he can take whatever's going on with Tank early, I don't see Tank going later with Santa Cruz. Here's the problem. It's like talking about Mike Tyson and Joe Frazier than that. I mean, I understand. I mean, Santa Cruz, there's size differentials. There's all sorts of other differentials. But when the fight boils down to certain things, this is Mike Tyson and Joe Frazier than me. If Mike Tyson can knock Joe Frazier out within those first four rounds, which is very, very, very capable, he's going to win. If he doesn't do that to Joe Frazier, Tank doesn't do that to Santa Cruz with the little 12 rounds. I see Tank getting worn out. One thing is this much. Tank is mega explosive. I haven't had to see Tank go through 12 rounds of being durable outside of his explosion. I've seen Tank blow people away. I've seen Santa Cruz have to deal with people with explosion and wear their asses out. Excuse my pardon, my language. But I've seen Santa Cruz against a much better array of competition. Tank, yeah, he's big, but I mean, if you're not gonna blow cats away when you have that size advantage and that, especially when you have size and explosion, you need to blow cats away. If you're not blowing them guys away, especially to the level of Santa Cruz, my God, I don't see Tank even lasting with him. After round six, Santa Cruz is that kind of guy who's that power is not even going to matter after that. If you're not going to lay it on him for 12 rounds, I don't see Tank winning. To be
honest, I'm sorry to interrupt you, man.
Oh no, you're fine.
I gotta get our first guest on, but we have a have our resident physician online, and you know, everybody. I said earlier, but I don't think Chris was on the line at the time, that he just got out of the hospital, University of Pennsylvania. He's going to be with us a lot longer now that he's feeling better. And Chris, why don't you chime in here with this while I get Malik on the line?
Dr. Chris.
I took a vacation. I went to some good doctors. I went the University of Pennsylvania Hospital. Got to be the finest hospital in the city. It's staffed by brilliant men, and I had a great week there. They decided not to do any operations. They're too risky. And just going to carry me on simple drugs and not do any risky operations. None of these top-notch doctors like to have their reputation destroyed by you know somebody dying on them on a table. So,
damn.
Yeah.
You damn right.
So I
said, you damn right.
So I said to the guy, I said, if I were your father, would you recommend this operation, knowing the risk? He goes, no. If you were my father, I wouldn't recommend it. I said, well, that's
damn.
All I have to hear. You know, if you wouldn't do it to your father, you're not going to do it to me.
Yeah.
And that was it. He said, we can put a valve in. We can put a new valve in. But we drag it up from, they make an incision in the groin. And they drag up a metal valve. And when it gets in the heart, they drag it across the heart. And when you're dragging that across the heart, if they hit that blood clot, and they knock it off, you could be history. So why the hell do I want to take that risk? I said, I'm happy as I am. I just can't do as much work. And that's not a bad thing. You know, I'm paying guys to do all this dirty work for me now, and they enjoy it. They're looking for jobs, and you pay $15 an hour cash. Yeah, there's 100 guys out there want to work for that.
Sure.
For the summer. So anyway,
Dr. Chris,
Yeah.
Oh no, I missed you and. I'm, like, literally rooting for you. I know me and my brother, we butch, we all rooting for you, you know, to always be around us. I wanted one question to ask you, though, as far as boxing is concerned. And I actually brought this question up, but I wanted your input on this. And I brought this analogy up just a few minutes ago. Joe Frazier against Mike Tyson. I always wanted to know what you thought about that, if they matched up prime for prime.
Boy, that's something to think about. Frazier in his prime and Tyson in his prime. One's got a great left hook and the other one's got a good hook, but he's got better right here. Well, let me think. That would be one hell of a fight, wouldn't it?
Like I want everybody's input from this type of thing too.
Okay. I'm going to, you know what, because of the shorter, stockier fighters giving Frazier a hard time, like the Argentinian, he used to drive Joe Frazier nuts, knock him down a couple of times.
Oscar Bonavina, you're right.
He gave Joe Frazier an awful hard time.
Really?
And I think that Frazier is better against taller guys where he gets underneath them and throws that powerful hook up and under. And when he fights guys his height, he doesn't do any good. When they're down to his side, he can't get under anybody. He can't bully him around inside. So I'd have to go with Tyson on that. All based on... On the way he fought the Oscar Bonavina, how hard a time he had with him. used to give him fits. Bonavena knocked him down. I mean, I actually thought it could have been a draw or going either way, the decision. So Joe Frazier was on a TV show in Philly, and they were fooling around lifting weights. And Joe Frazier tried to lift 185 pounds overhead. Couldn't get it to his shoulders. Could not get it to his shoulders. His entire thing was his legs. His legs were maybe strong. Oh, man, he was leg heavy. He'd get underneath
them. Leg heavy, I see that.
Come up with that hook. And if you were a stocky guy and stayed down there low with him, you'd give him fits. So if I had to pick an opponent, I'd go with Tyson over Frazier.
Over Frazier?
For that
Ty, what do you think?
Yeah.
Hey, Ty, what do you think? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Ty.
Go ahead, Butch. What are you saying?
We're joined by our newest member, Malik, is coming on, and he's got some fighters we're going to talk about. But let's finish this up, and then we'll go to Malik. In fact, he can go ahead and fill in with
absolutely.
The question.
Yeah, Malik, please chime in.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, who?
So you asked in my opinion, was it Tyson versus Frazier?
Tyson versus Joe Frazier,
yeah.
Prime for prime.
Tyson. He was just a monster, man. I mean, his resume speaks for itself. Not that I'm a Tyson fan because I'm also from Brooklyn, New York, but, I mean, I got to throw that.
You got to rep in Brooklyn, don't you?
I love all my Brooklyn fighters. But, me growing up, and I remember in 1985, he was the youngest heavyweight, to win. He will destroy Frazier for the sense that I feel like Frazier was really I hate to say this, but one dimensional, man. Without that left hook, I mean, that's the only thing you really got to worry about. And Tyson could overpower him, combination speed. I mean, I'm talking about the old Tyson. I'm not talking about the post, Buster Douglas Tyson.
Yeah,
I'm talking
the
about
prime
the
prime Tyson.
Customato,
yeah, you're talking
Customato
about the best of Tyson.
Yeah, man, that's what we're talking about. So, yeah, I absolutely go for Tyson. Overwhelmingly, the pressure, the power, he would take Frazier. That's my opinion.
Good analysis. Ty, what you think? Ty?
Mike Tyson, he's more dynamic, and he actually has the sturdier chin of him, too. And I think Dr. Chris really made valid points in talking about the Oscar Bonavita fight because he gave Frazier hell. In fact, one of the things Ali took pride in was being the guy to stop Bonavita. Bonavita was tough as nails. The only thing is that Tyson was more dynamic, more explosive. Frazier was better conditioned. Frazier could keep doing what he was doing for 15 rounds. Tyson could give you four or five, and then things would dramatically settle down. Now, make no mistake, he was still dangerous as hell, and he still beat a lot of guys. But the fact of the matter is if he doesn't get Frazier out within the first three or four rounds, he's going to find himself swimming in water that's a little too deep for him. So just to make it simple and plain, I like Tyson early, Frazier late.
Yeah, I got to say, being
okay.
from Philly,
okay.
not Brooklyn, that and my uncle had a piece of the action of Clover Leigh, my uncle Nino, and I would have to go with Frazier. I think your analysis there about him being in the better shape, he was fast. I think I would go with over the long run, if it wasn't in the first three or four rounds, I think he would have outlasted Tyson.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Yeah, but that'd be a hell of a three, four rounds.
Make no mistake. No guarantee he survived. We know he survived 4 or 5 with George Foreman, so we can't guarantee he's gonna survive those rounds with Mike.
Don't get up and get any popcorn for the fight. You're gonna
through the whole fight.
Mm-hmm. Mike Tyson always carried.
I mean, he carried his power with him. I mean, I remember the fights with Razor Ruddock. He was still hitting him with hella 5 shots later in the fight. You know what I mean? It's just that what's going to happen is I think he's going to come out and push Frazier back. And if he doesn't overwhelm Frazier, which is very possible, then the tide's going to turn, and Frazier, over the course of the long haul, is going to start to pull him underwater, pull him in a quicksand, and start pushing Mike back. So, interesting fight.
Malik, you have a...
I'm going to give my quick analysis on this.
Malik,
go for it.
He wanted to interview Malik, Dean.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Let's get your final analysis, and then we'll go to Malik.
All right, yeah, my final analysis is this. Tyson has 3 rounds. As Ty said, he has 3 rounds to deal with Frazier. Tyson's not knocking Frazier out in 3 rounds. You have to be 6'3 and over to deal with Frazier. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. Ali, he was 6'3 and over. Foreman, he was 6'3 and over and powerful. You want to deal with Joe Frazier, you're going to have to be a big guy. Tyson's not taking him out in 3 rounds. Simple as that. If he's not taking him out in 3 rounds, Tyson's losing.
Mm-hmm.
My analysis.
Okay. Okay. All right, let's. I think that was a good go round on that one, and thanks for bringing that up, Z. Malik, you have some pretty interesting fighters come up in your stable, and you've got a fight you say in the next week for Habib Ahmed. He's 27 and 1. He's a middleweight, moved up to middleweight. He's had a darn good career from what I can see. Why don't you give an analysis of your fighters?
Okay, yeah. Habib Ahmed, he's a great brother, and I say that with all affection, man. He's a very humble guy. And he works hard. So right now he's training in Miami, Florida, at Caicedo Sports, where Herman Caicedo. Herman is Luis Ortiz and Juan Carlos Payano's trainer. He's been over there for 2 years, and he's considered the hardest working person in that gym. He comes from a very humble background in Ghana. He started boxing very young, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with the boxing pedigree of Ghana, with Ike Corte and those guys. They are.
You mean specifically Accra, Ghana? Yes.
Accra, yeah, he's from Accra.
There you go.
Got to say it the right way, or they're gonna get you.
Yeah, Accra. Yeah, we familiar.
Accra.
Very familiar.
Absolutely.
Don't be trying to trick us on your first time out.
Yeah, you guys are too fast for me, man. You got me. So he's a great kid who came up in the Azuma Nelson promotional outfit out there. I mean, that's really the stronghold of professional boxing in Accra, Ghana. He came up. He qualified for the Olympics. I forget which year. So don't quote me on that. I mean, he held various regional African titles until he got a shot to fight for the world title against Gilberto Ramirez 2 years ago at super middleweight. So he went in as a super middleweight. So now that fight, you can see the fight. It's all online. What I love about Habib, and it's funny about this story. So I watched the fight. He wasn't my fighter at the time. I represented a couple of fighters, one from Nigeria, one from Ghana, Rafael Mensa. And he fought Alberto Machado a couple of years ago for the title on HBO. Anyways.
Okay.
So we was in Miami. We was at a sports bar, and we was going to watch the fight. And they said that their friend is fighting. And I said, who's that? And he said, oh, this is Habib Ahmed and whatever. So, you know, okay, I watch it and I cheer for him. And, you know, he was overpowered in the match. And I can tell you why later. But his spirit, he didn't give up. It was a TKO. He went about six rounds. He did what he can. He didn't quit. You know, his corner said, you know, you're not going to win it, so enough's enough. And then he stopped the fight. But he didn't quit. And when I watched him with my two fighters, I asked about him. They said that, you know, the guy has an incredible work ethic or whatever. So I said, hey, you know, reach out to him and see if he's looking for a manager. And it actually worked out. So I ended up signing him. I tried to get him promotional deals with Don King because both of my fighters are signed with Don King. And that didn't happen. So in the meantime, we sent him over to Herman Caicedo to work out in the gym. And they loved him. They loved him. They loved his work ethic. They loved how he was handling, you know, his other fighters in sparring. He's just amazing. So we end up getting a deal with PBC. He fought his first match against D'Angelo last year in Biloxi, and it was a unanimous decision. I think it was a 10-rounder. It was a unanimous decision. So he hasn't fought since. I mean, we had a fight set up with him and Robert Brandt in January this year, but Rob, he pulled his bicep muscles, so he scratched out of that match.
Oh, okay.
And then the COVID happened. But this is the thing that I like about Habib is that he's really off the radar.
How old is Habib, if you don't mind me asking?
He's 28 now.
Okay, so he's still pretty young. Okay.
Yeah, he's young. This guy left his family to come here and train for a world title. And in fact, I spoke to his brother today. His brother's in Ghana, and he told me, listen, don't allow him to come back to Ghana without the world title, period. And he has a newborn baby girl that he hasn't seen because he's training here in the States. Yeah, so this is how dedicated the guy is, right? His family is behind him and say, don't let him come home without a world title. I think that he's going to be he's probably one of the biggest sleeper at middleweight. And ideally we want to go down to 154. So I think he's a sleeper. Not many people know about
him.
Well,
if you had fought Rob Brandt, he wouldn't have been a sleeper anymore fighting Rob Brandt. That would have put him on the map. Rob Brandt would have put him right on the map.
And you know how the boxing business is, right? You know, nothing's guaranteed until they get into the ring.
We're
excited about the probably one of the biggest fights in his career because we feel good about Brandt. I think that Habib will beat Brandt, and I hope that Brandt can hear that, right? Habib will beat Brandt. But that didn't happen. So now we're fighting next weekend on the PBC card. This is actually a Showtime card. I think they have in a bubble over in the Mohican Sun in Connecticut. So we're going to go up there next Saturday night, August 15th. He's fighting Altidez Fox, which is a really good fighter.
Oh, Altidez Fox, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that lost
Fox,
to Liam Williams.
He went,
the last.
Yeah, Fox also went 12 with he went 12 with Demetrius Andre.
Yeah, yep.
But he got knocked out by Liam Williams, by one of the British guys.
Yeah,
okay, yeah. He's like 6'3", bro. He's like 6'4".
He's a big dude.
He's a big dude.
He is, but you know, as a manager, at one point when you think you have a great talent, you have to take those tough fights. So this is
a
tough fight.
I was just reading about that fight like 2 days ago. That's your guy. Congratulations, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you very much. Yeah, so it's a tough fight, but we look forward to it. Fox, he's ranked number 35 in the U.S., and we need that spot, you know, because Habib isn't ranked. We fight him, we beat him, we get ranked. We're going to be looking for anything in 160 to 154.
So what's his best weight? Is it 154 or 160 in your opinion, in his opinion,
okay.
I guess?
In my opinion, I believe he's good at 154 because he walks around at around 160. 162.
Oh, so he stays in shape. He doesn't grow up, huh? Okay, absolutely.
And that's what I was going to get. I wanted to get back to the Gilberto Romero fight, right? You know, Gilberto, he was a light heavyweight, like making weight at super heavy, super middleweight. Habib walked around under super middleweight. So when they fought, right? Yeah, of course they both weigh in the day before. They both 168 pounds, but the next day Gilberto was like 185 pounds.
They fought at what? 168?
Yep.
And who did he fight? You said again. He fought who?
Gilberto Ramirez.
He fought Gilberto Ramirez.
Humberto.
Yes.
Yep. At 168.
At 168. And that's
heavy, heavy as hell for Humberto. That's heavy as hell for Humberto.
No. Gilberto.
No, that's no.
Big.
No, Ramirez is big.
He's a big dude. I think you're talking about Jose Ramirez. Jose Ramirez is at one.
I'm thinking.
Jose Ramirez at 140.
Yeah.
No, Gilberto Ramirez is a big dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big
Ramirez.
Dude, man.
He's
a Mexican guy. In fact, he's fighting at 175 now. He's at
175. I thought I was talking about, you're right. Yeah,
remember, he was a big, tall, big, giant, light heavyweight. He's at 175 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's at 175, he was at 168.
Yeah, well, he moved up. He was big.
That mother was tall as hell. I'm sorry. That kid was tall as heck.
Yeah, he's tall and big. That's why he's moved up to
180.
Yeah. Really, he's trying to angle for a fight with Berdabiev. So, obviously, Habib was fighting a really big guy. He was fighting a huge one.
Like Jaime Munguia is a very big. Like, what is Munguia?
Munguia moved up to 160.
He needed to, but he needed Jaime. Let me tell you about Jaime. Jaime, as good as he is, he wasn't the best at 154.
So
Jaime
so
was
to
getting
me,
torn
big,
apart.
That's a big statement for Habib to even go up and take that fight. Obviously, it's a championship. You got to go ahead and try. But that was the odds were obviously that was set up to make Gilberto look good.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It goes to the boxing politics of Ghana. Right, so they take
boxing
the best that they get, and they go for a
there
shot. They need that's a big money,
right,
and that's a lot of money for Ghana. So they're going to take that kind of fight. But here we wouldn't take it. In fact, that's how Habib actually calling me now. Let me
I'm sorry, y'all. My phone going to die. I love y'all. I'm probably going to have to go because I'm not going to let my phone die while I'm talking to y'all. So.
That's right.
I love
you. Appreciate that, Mike.
Hey, Z, we'll see you next week.
I appreciate being with all of y'all. Thank you very much. I'll talk to y'all later, all right?
Okay, take care.
Bro. Peace. Peace. Love y'all. Peace.
Later, man. Yeah, so, like, in Ghana, I feel like they undersized there. So, for Habib to be fighting super middleweight, that wouldn't have happened here. That wouldn't happen at all. He would have had to cut weight, and he would have came in been fighting at 154. But there, you know, whatever weight they walk around at, they just put him in that weight class. So it's different.
Right.
I mean, you may have your different opinions about that. You know, you may think that that's just the most natural, organic way to fight, and that these other fighters who big kind of trying to cut weight. I mean, some people have a particular feeling about that. But at the end of the day, it just was not equal in terms of size because Habib came in as a true middleweight to super middleweight. I think Gilberto came in as a light heavy heavyweight
cruiserweight.
Super middleweight.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Well, you know what? Think about it. Light heavyweight's 175. I guarantee you, if he weighed in at 168, he came in over the white heavyweight limit, which would have made him a cruiserweight effectively against. A middleweight?
I believe he came in over 180.
That's a cruiserweight.
He came in at 180. And Habib, you know, he 168, he probably lost weight. You know?
Wow.
So you saw the size difference. You saw the height disparity.
Habib's only loss?
That's his only loss. Absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. I think we have something special. Yep, we have something special here, and I'm glad that he's going to get a chance to show the world who he is. And, you know, he's a great kid, so I wish the best for him. You know, I wish the best. I wish utmost success for him.
Emelik, you've got another fighter in your stable, Anthony Yegert. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Anthony Yegert, he is lightweight. I think he's going to go down to I think he's super lightweight. He's going down to lightweight, 135. He's from Sweden. He was an Olympic.
He's the guy who fought in the Super Six tournament.
Yep, absolutely. And got his eye, the big grapefruit eye. You remember that fight?
Yo, yeah. First of all, you got a tough ass kid there. That's a tough kid. And he's got some sweet skills too, man. I was really impressed with him. I was really impressed with him in that fight.
Absolutely, man. And he is, man, he's a great kid too. He's over in Sweden. They're dealing with the COVID just as we are here.
Right.
And, you know, but he kept training. He just got out of his, promotional contract with Shaolin. And that's why you didn't see him much in the States. But after that contract, we signed him, in a management contract exclusively to bring him to the States. So, you know, we have some, we had some good plans with him. He has a fight on the 12th of September. I don't know the name. I think the name is to be announced. So he'll be here in the States this September for, you know, pretty much a, you know, warm-up fight. But we're already getting calls for some really big fights, really big names on the championship level.
Hey, Malik, did you say he's fighting at lightweight?
He's going to fight at lightweight, yep.
Wow, because he was in a tournament at 140. So, again, he was – you know what? And the funny thing is that's the one thing I – that's what made his performance so gutsy. First of all, he had a nasty cut. But his skill set was really impressive. It was very clever to me. But he was obviously over – like, he was small compared to – I forget the Russian he was fighting. A really rough guy, who's big. You know what I mean? And I remember that's what made me so impressed. I was like, you know, this little idiot guy is hanging in there, man. He put up a good fight. Man,
yeah,
he's
my
guy,
he's
man.
Yeah, you know, and I have others coming as well, but those are the two that we're focusing on. Habib, to me, is he's the sleeper. I'm going to say it here. He's the sleeper, and expect to see him and to know him and expect that he's going to make – He's going to get a title shot very soon. Anthony Yegert, I mean, he's a pressure fighter, good kid. He's really confident. I think he was in the Olympics when Loma was there. So he knows Loma, you know. So he has that boxing.
He's a very skilled kid, man. Very skilled kid.
He has that boxing pedigree, very professional. I expect great things from him. So September 12th, he'll be here.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Malik, it seems like you get a lot of character guys that show that character in the ring. You go ahead and scoop them up, man, because, you know, everything else can be learned. Some things can't be taught, and it seems like you have a knack for finding the ones who have what can't be taught.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, number one is dedication and loyalty to the team. But it's work ethic, man. You know, if you outwork everyone in the gym, I mean, that's how you become a champion, period. All champions outwork everyone else. It's not, you know, a mistake. You know, it's not luck. It's hard work. So you take whatever tools that you have and you use them to the best of your ability. And how do you use them to the best of your ability? You get in your butt in the gym and work. And I'm going to tell you this. I just called Habib 30 minutes ago, right before the show, because I wanted to, you know, talk to him and say, hey, do you want me to say anything, you know, specific? He was running. FaceTime him. He's running and say, hey, boss, I'll call you back. He's training. What is it, Saturday night? Coach Herman Caicedo's probably asleep because he's an early guy. He's doing it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
he's doing it on his own.
That.
And those are the people who are going to be champions, man. For sure.
Sure. Sure.
It
well,
really
guys,
sounds
just
like you just needed a really quality manager. It really does. So, you know, congratulations. And I definitely wish you and your team the best of luck, man.
I really appreciate that, man. And thank you for having
me. Almost,
it's fun.
Hey, Weeks, you know, Mike said you might be willing to be on with us each week. Is that true?
He said each week?
That's what he said.
Well,
he talked to Mike about that.
How much information I have, you know, if I have enough information to give you something new every week, I'm ready, man. It's
my God.
I do the programming, and we come up with all the names of fighters. Like one of the guys that both Dr. Chris and Ty follow is Arislandi Lara, and he's got a fight coming up. On the 29th of this month.
Arislandi Lara, better watch out for Khabib.
Yeah. Yes, for sure.
That's at 154. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Everybody needs to watch him. Herb, you know, Charlo brothers, they need to watch him. That's what
mm-hmm.
I hear. All right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, again, thanks for coming on, Malik, and I'll let you settle it with Mike as to whether you want to come on each week or not, and then just let me know. But, the common friend we have here is Mike Zimczak. Mike is one of our Wednesday night hosts, does a great job both in boxing and soccer. So I understood. Did you serve with him, Malik?
I did not, but we spoke, you know, extensively about we were both airborne. We were both in the airborne
right.
unit in the U.S. Army. So, yeah, we talk about it, but we didn't serve together. Unfortunately,
okay.
I'm a little older than him.
Okay.
He said, unfortunately, I'm a little older than him.
all right. Well, we thank you for coming on and sharing sharing the news of your fighters with us, and this line is always open for anybody that you have coming up that you want to talk to. Our listeners tonight, so that you know, is 266,403 worldwide. In the New York area, we have 22,795. So. You know, we have.
So you want to bring Malik on to bring those numbers, those New York
that,
numbers
I would
up?
Yeah, been a little more professional.
That'll help us bring our numbers up, certainly.
Yeah. This is great, man.
Thanks a million for being with us, and we appreciate it. And hope to hear from you in the very near future. And good luck to next
you
week
for having me. Thank you so much.
Okay,
thanks, Malik. Take care, bro.
All right, guys.
Chris. Bye-bye. Chris, you've been very quiet tonight.
Well, I'm a listener, and everybody has some good things to say, so I just sit back and listen.
Well,
I was thinking about when Joe Frazier, what you guys were saying about Frazier, and here's what I don't like against Tyson. Frazier has to set all his weight on his left foot when he moves in. And he lifts up with his legs and his back, and that's how he gets his power. Legs and his back, and and I don't think he could get under Mike Tyson. I think Tyson would be able to handle that. Now, a taller man, he can fight a taller man, you know, and get underneath him. Not a guy as big and strong as George Foreman. George Foreman would push him down. You know,
I think Frazier's
limited to the style of the guy he's fighting. I don't think Tyson has a good style for him. I think Frazier would be confused.
And you know, one thing that George Foreman was able to do is Foreman had range, so he was able to keep him out a little bit. But Foreman he pushed Frazier back. He pushed him down and
pushed him down.
One thing I think would be very problematic because I remember when Oscar Bonavita and Frazier met, they kind of met in the center of the ring. Against Mike Tyson, because of how dynamic he is, he's going to push Frazier back. And like you said, Frazier sort of one-dimensional. And Frazier's not going to
yeah.
– Tyson could overwhelm him by pushing him back and really kind of
yeah. –
it could be, like you said, a very bad style matchup where Frazier could be utterly destroyed and overwhelmed pretty early.
Yeah, he's not good against that Tyson style opponent. He needs a taller man that he can get underneath of and give him fits. You know?
Yeah, Bonavina
like,
gave
like
him
like the taller
hell.
Guy is going to throw uppercuts at him. You
yeah.
throw uppercuts at Frazier, he's going to come over the top of the hook and take half your head off. You know, that's what he
yeah,
needs.
You know what,
Dr. But
Chris,
if he's
I thought Bonavina won that first fight too. I thought he beat Frazier that first fight.
Yeah, I felt that way too. I felt the
yeah.
same way. Actually, Joe hated to fight him. Joe didn't want to fight him. He said, "There's one guy I don't want to fight. I don't like to fight him. He's too damn strong." And he is strong.
Yeah.
Bonavina was a damn bull.
Oh,
he was stronger.
God.
He was stronger in his upper body than Joe was. You know, and had a big back on him, big wide back. And
strong,
he was about 5'10".
It could take a punch.
Yeah, do it.
Could take a punch. Wow.
Yeah, yes, he could. So, you know, but he was limited in his training. I thought he could have had a better career, but there were some good heavyweights around when he was fighting.
Oh, yeah.
And he couldn't beat Ali. He couldn't outbox Ali. There's no way he's going to
beat
Ali.
And he was too crude in his footwork to catch up to Ali.
He couldn't.
Too crude in his
He couldn't. Ali could stay out of range all
yeah.
night against him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember that fight. I saw it down at the St. Anthony's gym. I saw that fight down there that night. And he just stayed out of range. And I think about the 14th or 15th round, didn't he knock him out?
Yes, sir.
Didn't he knock Bonavina out?
Yeah, and Ali, in fact, that's what made Ali, they said that's what made Ali convinced that he could go ahead and take care of Joe Frazier. He was like, look, I was able to stop Bonavita because that was a big feather
yeah.
in his cap because of, you know, how Bonavita was. So,
that was a good fight. I remember seeing that one. Good old St. Anthony's, you know.
That's right.
Yeah,
we on YouTube, Dr. Chris. Might have to pull that one up on YouTube later on.
Yeah. Hey, Ty, before we go ahead, Chris.
That's all right.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I'm listening.
No,
go
I
ahead,
saying,
Frank.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
I am finished.
Oh, okay. Before we close out, we haven't done anything on MMA today yet. Ty, what's your thoughts on Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Castro? That's coming up tonight.
That is it. No, that's actually in a few weeks or
a few weeks,
months,
yeah.
maybe next month. Next month, but that is a huge fight. One of the reasons why it's huge is kind of historic too, because only once or twice has the UFC had two undefeated guys fighting for the title, and you know, champions undefeated and Paulo Castro's undefeated. And Paulo Costa is an animal. And, you know, Israel Adesanya is known to be a very technical, slick striker. Paulo Costa, you know, a big, super strong guy who brings pressure. So you have a striking battle, but you have that classic pressure versus kind of slickness kind of fight. You know what I mean? So it's a very, very interesting fight. It's going to be a very good fight tactically. Right now, I think I lean slightly towards the betting underdog, which is going to be Paulo Costa. But we'll see as the fight gets a little closer.
All right. How about Vicente Logue against Nate Diaz? What's your thoughts on that one?
That fight won't happen. Vicente,
no.
It's a fight Vicente wants, but Nate Diaz is only coming out for $1 million gate. So unless you're talking like Conor McGregor or Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah.
Nate
right.
Diaz is not playing.
All right. But they do have
I'll tell you
coming back. Go ahead.
Frank, I'll tell you a fight you want to watch. Cormier and the big guy from Cleveland.
Miocic. Yep, that's
what a
big 2 weeks.
He's a big damn moose. Naturally big guy. Just big, strong, tough. He's from my friend's hometown, actually from around the same neighborhood. So I've been following his career all along. I think Cormier's too small for him. If Cormier can handle him, that would amaze me. Well, that is one big man.
This is their third fight. Cormier knocked him out in the first round, the first fight. He knocked Cormier out the fourth round in the second fight. So this is the tiebreaker, the rubber match. I actually favor Stipe. I think Stipe is going to win again. But these two have had two great fights. They mesh really nice. Their styles mesh really well together. Thus far.
Yeah.
But I got to lean towards Stipe in this one. So. But that's coming. That's in a couple weeks. That's a huge fight.
Yeah, that's coming.
Dana White says this determines the greatest heavyweight of all time in the UFC, and it really would probably, the winner of this probably will be considered the greatest UFC heavyweight of all time. So it's a really big fight, and it's Cormier's. It's his last fight. He's going to retire. So very, very good fight.
Right, and they get Jorge Masvidal has announced that he is going to return by the end of 2020 to the ring. So we'll see where that one goes.
Right.
All right. Well, that finishes up the script I got here for tonight. Chris, I really appreciate your coming on, especially since you just got home from the hospital. We're so happy that everything's working out for you.
Negative, guys.
There
I
you go.
Good. Negative, so no, you don't have to.
Good.
You don't have to run from me. You know,
so I don't have to. I don't have to wear my mask on the phone, Dr. Chris.
No, you don't have to wear your mask. You don't have to run. I'm negative.
Okay.
I went out Westchester and they take a swab and the woman said 2 days later she goes, "You're negative. You could go to
good.
Or they won't take you in a hospital.
Yeah,
they won't let you in.
I mean, yeah.
Great.
Good.
I'm
glad
say,
to hear all is well with you. So glad to hear it.
Yeah, again. All is well. All is well.
Right.
I got money to spend now. I got a chance to spend some of my money. So we'll see. We'll see how much I got left. You know.
All right,
guys. Catch
you
next
week.
During
the week. Okay.
All right, Frank. Take it easy. Bye, guys.
Bye. Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, it was great having Zito, Dr. Chris on. We thank you to Malik for coming on and telling us about his fighters. Everybody look out for them. Butch, always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Mel is watching over us. Everyone have a good night.
Great. Well, I want to thank Malik for coming on, Chris for coming on. Of course, Ty and Zito are always there for me whenever I need them. Our technical backgrounds, one can always take sense into what they do. They're able to break it down for each and every one of our listeners, whatever level of boxing they are. So we appreciate that. And we appreciate Coach Mel and Bob. Of course, they're always on our mind. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the United States Armed Forces and men and women of police and fire services, as well as those fighting on the first line of defense in COVID-19. These programs are also dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Pager, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Handler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogel, Longwood Cay Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department. Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff. Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department. Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond. Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department. Lieutenant Wilmington Fire Department. FDLE Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio. Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Boward. Kissimmee Police Officer Matt Baxter. Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard. Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department. Clay County Sheriff's Department, Clay Zerba. Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Department. Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Department. Officer Bob McCutcheon, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. And Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-10 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Till that time, may the roads rise out to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the hollow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shema hezahilma sona shen vorat fet akuig again my ilma
responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. night, Bob. We love you and we miss you.